First of all, let's define our goal here. Our goal is to get on the air. That should be whether it's NPR, APR, or commercial radio. Why keep second-guessing yourself and keep yourself off the air if, oh my gosh, if I broker time on this station, I won't be able to go to Jerry Gibson and get this record. So I just won't get on the air at all. I'll just keep bothering NEA and NPR and all that, and maybe I'll get on the air, maybe, for a while, before NPR changes its mind again and a new bureaucracy comes in. So the first thing is, let's get on the air, and then you got to run what you brung. Then the second item is, to quote blues singer Carl Martin, you're giving some advice to a friend of mine in Chicago, you got to sell it. You get out there and hustle. First of all, when you're brokering time, you're not that much a victim of format changes, Charlie, as your friend is, because the station, most stations that broker time, you buy that slot, and they don't care as long as they get their money. It's up to you to turn around and hustle in your community and drum up the support the same way you do on public radio to support your program. And you own that slot. There's a guy who's been on the air in Chicago for 20 years, smack dab in the middle of a classical radio station with a four-hour program that doesn't belong in that format at all, but he's been tremendously successful and has no shortage of sponsors and has even parlayed it into other businesses. It took a while, but you got to start someplace.
What kind of music does he program?
He programs vintage radio, programs big band, and has guests talk.
Shaden?
Yeah, Shaden's program. That's the most. I point to that not necessarily because of the format, but because of the man's success. And I think if we all got out there and hustled in the same way this guy did, we could keep just about anything on the air. Then once you get on the air and you build your support, then maybe you'll have time. Maybe you'll have the money to put together a show for nothing on a nonprofit station, and then you can get all that neat stuff out of the LLC. But first, you gotta sell it.
A good feeling.
Do you think he's the exception, or rather the rule, and something that we should look towards?
I think he's an example of what can be done with a lot of legwork. We're talking about legwork and not paperwork here.
Yeah, but that's another element of entertainment that has broad popular appeal too, isn't it, Rich? I think you're starting ahead of the game rather than if you're talking about classical music on either side of Bach or Stravinsky, if you're talking about ancient country music or ethnic or music with a distinct minority education.
Well,
I should have said
minority radio stations in Chicago then, which are nothing but brokered time. And the Ukrainian program isn't necessarily slotted at 6 in the morning. If the producer of that program buys prime time.
But that only works because there are many Ukrainians or Poles or whatever in the audience. It doesn't work because of intrinsic artistic merit of that kind of music, does it?
Because there's support for the program, one way or the other.
If I might make a point to an example that happened recently with a public radio station, and Tom and I were just talking about this, and I can't remember where exactly they were located, but they had a new program director, a new director of broadcasting come in, and they had that type of programming on Sunday, all day Sunday. And she came in and took a look at the schedule and essentially eliminated all those programs.
Then you go to another station.
Right. Well, I'm sure that's what they're doing. But I think that the fundamental change in radio, it reflects the fundamental change in America. We are increasingly moving with networks, whether it be APR, NPR, CBS affiliate, or whatever, to a homogenized society that is controlled on either coast, West Coast, or East Coast, and they say, okay, we must have consistency out there. And they are exerting their control over their member stations.
There is no
to eliminate the kind of programming we're talking about.
I don't disagree with you on that, and I see the same thing happening in NPR. And that's why I think it's important to go to your local stations. And especially if you're lucky enough to be in a metropolitan area like Kansas City or Chicago, there's always somebody there. If it's not right in the metropolitan area, it's out in a suburb that is beaming into the city. But it gives you a foot in the door. And there will always be policy changes no matter where you go, whether it's commercial or non-commercial. You can't keep second-guessing yourself.
Okay, the next person, please.
Jim Ryder, Atchison, Kansas. In regards to making requests for permission, is there any publication that kind of gives an address of who to write to? I know a couple of years ago, I was looking to obtain the rights from Deutsche Grammophon to have some recordings transcribed of Franz Schrecker, and all I could find was looking at the record catalogs. They're somewhere in Hamburg, Germany. So I wrote Deutsche Grammophon in Hamburg, Germany, West Germany, and fortunately, they're a big enough company that they've got it routed to the right place, and I got a nice reply back. Some companies, I know there's a problem because some of the companies have either gone out of business or merged, and you really have no idea who to write for rights.
That information can be found in the Billboard Buyer's Guide, and they have addresses and phone numbers of most labels, large and small.
That was very prominent before, and what I call the dark ages of permission. That was before the 76 tax, Copyright Act. For the first time in history in this country, the Copyright Act of 1976 has two sections, 106 and 107, that grant, you see, a statutory rights to educational institutions to get this kind of thing under the fair use doctrine. So I advise you to get acquainted. I'm very well acquainted with that because I went through much of that. Before 76, I know many cases people who wanted to get a record for a dissertation or for a totally educational use. I can tell you a dozen cases at UCLA. They were given by the, whether it's the Library of Congress or Rogers and Hammerstein, whichever, these permissions. I remember somebody trying to get some record from an Argentinian artist. And they were given about half a dozen long extinct copyright holders. This fellow spent about 6 months trying to get permission for a dissertation. He could not get the people who were dead, they were extinct, they had changed ownership. So it was impossible. But you see, at that time, you have a different ball game. You have the common law copyright principle applied even to educational uses. Now, fortunately, thanks to the 76 Act, we have the section 107 and 108. I can tell you another case, you know, Vanderbilt University in 1972 began, you see, recording newscasts. 68, yes, sorry. In 1972, they were sued by CBS. They said, okay, the speeches of Kennedy or Johnson are public domain, but we own the airwaves, so we're going to sue you for copyright infringement. Well, that backfired in a most disastrous way. Congress was at that time deliberating about a new copyright law, and there was a bipartisan resolution introduced. I have all of the documentation here. It was a bipartisan resolution 1361 in the U.S. Senate. Amendment, the congressmen became so infuriated by this action of CBS that they introduced an amendment saying that it does not constitute an infringement of copyright to record audiovisual newscasts for fair use, educational use, and so on. So then it became a moot. And I bet you anything that if a record company now sue you because you want to do an educational broadcast or a dissertation and try to get from LC or New York Public some record long out of print, the Congress would come down upon them in the same way. So it's a sort of, you know, bluff situation, but I bet you they will never exercise that right, you know, to sue you because they have the precedent of what happened with Vanderbilt and CBS. So that goes, I don't want to go into the discussion. But anyway, we are kind of running out of time. We have only about 15 minutes left. I would like to ask two persons, Tom Davis and Rick Ross. The emphasis that I had to produce this panel is because I have a sense of urgency, both in two areas, collection development and exchanges, and getting out in the air, educating people. That's the reason, maybe in some next year or the following year, I will have maybe some panel with jury explaining my role in having exchange of recordings with the Library of Congress. I have now also here with Jerry Parker with the Canadian people. I like to see recordings distributed as much as possible. I like the proliferation of educational collection in institutions. I feel it's so damn important that the recordings that I know in Chile or Europe or Argentina, whichever, they are deposited here and the recordings here are deposited in those countries. Exchange and proliferation of recordings, that's one of my missions. The other mission, when I see you people, there are hundreds of talented collectors with an expertise that nobody in the entire world can match, who can match the expertise of you in this room about your areas of expertise? And I say, let's get them out. Let's try to get out in the air. I don't expect you to pay for your own pocket, you know, for these things. There had to be some source of support. And I would like to ask Tom Davis and Rick Ross, suppose, Tom, that some of these collectors would like to produce a program on whichever, let's say, Operatic Voices or Julia Lee or Duke Ellington. And most of these collectors, Tom, they have very, very good knowledge of electronics and equipment. They have been collecting records. They have very good equipment, tape recorders, cassettes. What advice would you give to some of these people here to get out in the air? Would you accept them as a representative of NFCB, National Federation of Community Broadcasters, a really educational network? What are the standards for you to accept this? Then I would like to ask Rick, from the beginning, what kind of record keeping should you keep in order to deduct as much as possible every possible tax loophole that you can possibly take, you know? So,
that sounds good. Yeah.
Okay, Tom and Rick.
Okay, Edwin. I want to express to you what Carlos said, and it's very important. This is an urgent situation because there's like Congress is involved in this thing, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, NFCB, and the fact that sound recordings, like we have awards programs. There's many awards programs happening in America, and you might not realize this, but sound recordings, I don't think there's a big award for them. Most of them are documentaries, news information, and comedy or whatever. But like sound recordings are just not, and it's because I think a lot of us spend a lot of time with our recordings, and we're very knowledgeable, and we maybe think that, you know, everybody has the same amount of knowledge about some of these collections that you have, and they don't, because they have not been on the airwaves and they have not been exposed. The best one thing that I urge all of you to do is if you're an independent producer, there are a few independent production agencies or companies, you know, this air.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you should maybe get in touch with them because they're trying to, they're starting now to have an impact on what the system is. When I say the system, I'm speaking of the public radio system and what the, I guess, the standards are going to be in the future, simple versus high tech. And, you know, get in touch with organizations like NFCB, listen to the independent productions that are on radio, and try to make them of, I guess, as of good a quality as possible. And we have a few places where you can get them distributed. American Public Radio, National Public Radio has just had a big cutback so that like all of their funding is going to be into one little package and everybody has to compete for it. And then NFCB and Pacifica, our archives there, we will pretty much, like I say, have just a few of these. We will pretty much accept recordings, and we have some standards, but the standards are more acceptable for the level of community mindedness. As long as the presentations are in a good form, they don't have to be as high tech as National Public Radio. But it's important that you put quality and information into your production and make it something that can be, I guess, that can fit with basically a general audience format, be it minority, be it whatever type of programming it is. But I think the important thing of it is to do something, and keep in mind that this is an urgent situation. It's not something that we can go back and put it on and say we'll deal with it in 6 months. It's something that we've got to deal with right now.
From the standpoint of tax loopholes, IRS doesn't like to hear those words.
Oh,
they spent a considerable amount of time and money over the last 10 years in what they hope will be the eventual closing of most tax loopholes.
I'm sorry, my ignorance of English, you know.
Although in a roundabout way, they give incentives for
incentives.
Tax incentives, tax benefits, tax deductions, etc. So we'll address that issue. Keep in mind that whatever you do in the way of deductions, the government looks at those deductions on a form versus substance content. If you give something or do something and you take a deduction for it, and the government later questions it, whether it's in the course of an audit, office audit, or field audit, whatever the case may be, you're going to have to prove up and substantiate the nature of those deductions, not just the mere fact that you've got canceled checks, receipts, et cetera. So it's the form versus substance content, and substance always wins out. As to the ways and methods, I'd like to expand on what Steve had indicated a little bit earlier on the 3 years of profit out of 5 consecutive years of in business. Most public radio and other public institutions have fundraising affairs. They live and exist by monies they raise, whether they come from individuals, institutions, etc. If you and your friends give to a public radio station, and they in turn use that money to produce specialized broadcasts for the area, and you receive as a subsidy to produce a radio show for that station, a subsidy, a grant, a fee, then you have a profit motive in which to produce that show. So again, keeping in mind that they exist on contributions, however they're received, if they in turn use the money to subsidize radio shows and you receive a fee for the production of one of those radio shows, and again, if you show a profit in any 3 out of 5 consecutive years, then you've met the test. And I think that's the way to look at the situation.
Thank you very much, Rick. By the way, Rick has to leave today, this evening, so if you have any questions about what he has said about tax breaks or incentives or publications, contact him today before he leaves this afternoon. The other thing I wanted to tell you is we cannot look at ARSC to do any kind of lobbying on our behalf. ARSC is a non-profit tax-deductible organization, and by law, they're precluded from doing any kind of lobbying, political lobbying. So if we want to see increment in funds given to NEA for grants or NFCB for a program, we have to do it in our own. And that's what I feel. We need some kind of ad hoc group or committee, and I feel this convention here, this conference, would be an excellent opportunity to get together all of us to discuss maybe some action group to write to Congress or see some way, you know, to change the laws to make it more favorable to produce it. Because as I say, according to the rules now, we are doing a hobby that only the rich will engage into, you know. We are not doing anything educational. We are just engaged in a hobby, like collecting bottles or matchboxes or stamps. But what we're doing is the sense of urgency, as I say, as Tom says. I feel the tremendous urgency to get out in the air and educate the new generations on the great legacy, whether it is jazz, opera, conducting styles, operatic singing, country, whichever. But we have to get out in the air. And how can we do that? I advise you also, I bring you the best regards of NEA. I myself have been the recipient of 3 grants in the past. The grants are not very large. They're generally in the range of $5,000 to $10,000 or $12,000. They're not very large, but if you can do, let's say, 10, 12, 15 programs with that amount of money, at least it will serve you to cover some of the equipment, the tape, and some of the expenditure, you know, to produce and do the research for the program. So NEA asked me, this is also another sad reflection, they could not afford the money. They are very underfunded. NEA wanted very much to come here, a representative from the National Endowment for the Arts. They could not make it, but at least they sent us enough applications there, and please keep in mind that you have until October the 10th to make the application. They're not that difficult. And please do it. Do you have any concluding remark? If you have any questions, go to the microphone. Any concluding remarks from any of you? Chuck?
Well, I guess I would just say, reflect on what the gentleman there was saying. Get involved, y'all, with your local public radio station, because you are the public in public radio.
And Tom?
I would just like to say that NFCB is probably, I guess, one of the organizations that's like a clearinghouse for independent producers, and we'd like lobby on behalf of independent producers. And right now, I guess this is like the best time because, like, to get the message of independent production out there, because the Public Telecommunications Committee, they're like they're ready and they're doing this big expansion thing. And I definitely want to see sound recordings as part of the big expansion. Like Chuck was saying, I don't think it needs to be, the expansion thing needs to be this seamless thing or this top 40 public radio system. It needs to be diverse, and it needs to be something that everybody can have access to. And I want to repeat also that it is an urgent situation. And I've always found that it's better to maybe not lobby as a whole group, as a organization sometime, but to do it individually to your people in Congress, to anybody that has an ear, to let them know that you're there. Because a lot of people don't know that this organization exists. They don't know that there's all these big collections existing. They don't know that Sam over on 7th Street has 10,000 records in his basement that needs to be heard.
Two things. I'll second the motion for lobbying the congressman, because that's the only way to get tax laws changed. And as important, become aware of the tax deductions you're entitled to. Get the publications that the government makes available to you free of charge. Know what deductions you can take and take them. The government isn't going to give you a tax deduction. They're not going to give you a refund. They're not going to return any money to you unless you ask for it. Become aware, become informed, and take the deductions that you're entitled to.
Perhaps in beginning to wrap up, yet another suggestion. I'm getting the feeling from the sense of urgency stated here on the part of several folks at the table with me on the intensity and the many different responses we've had out here. Is this, I'll just throw the question out generally, a topic that ARSC should try to stay on top of in any systematic way? We have a Fair Practices Committee, a Preservation Committee, AAA. Do we, as a body, want to take a comparable interest in broadcasting, in public broadcasting, in minority music presentations, enough so that we would like to perhaps not form a lobbying group? I don't know that that's appropriate for us, but certainly form ourselves as a public interest group and try to create some sort of intelligent policy, as much maybe to guide ourselves in the area of public broadcasting, since we have so many people involved at one level or another, and perhaps to act as a kind of backup when people want to do public interest lobbying at the congressional, local level, even in strong-arming your local station manager and program director. I'll put a big question mark at the end of that. Maybe that's something to approach in the business meeting.
Thank you very much, all of you. And as I say again, probably you summarized very well, we need a network of talent, knowledge, interest. So let's keep in touch, all of us. Let's keep this network of collecting, sharing, exchanging, and production, and going out in the air to educate, to enlighten the younger generations in this wonderful treasure that we have in our collection. Let's keep doing that, and maybe some changes will come. There we have, you know, NFCB, ready, eager, willing to accept some of your productions. There you have, you know, the advice of Rick Ross to take every deduction possible to keep a good record keeping. The advice of Chuck and Dick there to keep exchanging information. And even we have there the application from NEA. We have also been very, very sympathetic. And I can say, you know, I cannot say enough about them. NEA has been very generous to fund programs that NPR, APR, CPV would never even touch. So don't lose hope, and maybe there's hope there. So let's keep in touch and keep working, and maybe this will be an ongoing thing, Dick. So thank you very much to all of you. We'll have lunch now, and we'll have to assemble very, very promptly at 1:30 here.